Welcome to the fourth installment in our series in partnership with the Community Energy Project. In previous episodes, we've talked with Sam Barrasso of Portland Clean Energy Fund, Anissa Pemberton, Environmental Partnership Manager at Coalition of Communities of Color, Charity Fain, the Executive Director of Community Energy Project, and Project Director Sherry Vilmark. These episodes are filled with a lot of great information and resources that can help you change your relationship with not just your energy bill, but give us the information we need for our communities to move into a more efficient and mutually beneficial relationship with our environment. So listen close, take some notes if you need to, and most importantly, check out our previous episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts. We want to thank you all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m., and if you missed us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we out here.
Yes.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, yes. House Party,
yes.
YouTube,
there.
Twitch, Black Planet. I know y'all talking about our OnlyFans. It's going crazy in there. MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the TikTok and Google Plus. And in this episode, we putting you up on what is good. Ken, how you been, B?
Oh, you know, just living lifestyles of trying to be rich and famous.
But of course, but I'm trying to keep up with you. I'm trying to keep up with you, big dog.
Yeah, I'm double guacking it at every chance I get. That's my attempt.
We want to thank y'all for tuning in for another special episode of our series as part of the Community Energy Project. Mm-hmm. For this episode, we are joined by James Matois, Workforce Development Training Manager at Earth Advantage. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thank y'all for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We were just commenting before the recording how these days seem a lot shorter because it's getting darker a lot quicker. So thank you for for staying up with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, there's a lot happening in this space and glad to be a part of this conversation.
Yeah. How excited are you? Because I'm going to tell you the truth. Like when we first started this project, I wasn't really sure how many of us were really involved in the energy sector. I mean, I understood the importance, and coming up in high school, you know, it's always make sure you find fluorescent light bulbs and energy saving this and energy save, yeah, you know, and you do everything you can as a consumer. And there was a big boom, but then it kind of like faded away. And no one was really talking about energy efficiency. No one was really talking about recycling. No one was really talking about just doing whatever we can to make sure our environment is not just safe, but surviving and you know, moving in a proper direction. So what brought you to this work?
So I'm originally from Louisiana. My father was in the HVAC business. He also had his own business, kind of tinkering, working on appliances, helping people's fix their dishwasher, their washing machine, but he also had his own HVAC company as well. So, you know, keeping people comfortable in the middle of those Louisiana summers was, you know, job security for him. So, you know, that's really how I started and got to work in this industry. I have worked my way up through the, you know, different careers, and energy efficiency, green building is the one that has stuck. I will be with this until, you know, the end of time. There's just so much work to be done here. So many people to be informed of what that is, whether you want to get into the industry, whether you have a home, whether you're trying to teach other people about the industry. There's just so much going on here, and the work that Community Energy Project is doing and the Portland Clean Energy Fund and the things that are on the horizon there are really kind of culminating for me. It's just like, yes, like this is finally getting to this point to where it can be something, you know, just beyond the work that I'm doing and really helping people attain energy efficient, healthy, durable, sustainable homes.
You used the interesting phrase just now that you would be doing this work to the end of time. Yeah. And I think for a lot of us, when we talk about what the future looks like and it being unsustainable and us being in this like dystopian, terrible future, that seems so far away, but it really isn't, right?
Well, so one of the things, you know, like there's a joke in the energy efficiency industry, building codes are always changing every 3 to 4 years, right? And so technically we're going to be out of a job doing energy efficiency work because the codes are going to get to a point to where they're saying homes have to be built to a certain code, right? But the thing is, that's on new homes. We have so many existing homes that were built pre, you know, 1970s when building science and energy efficiency really started to take off. So we have a lot of homes and a lot of work to do there. And these are also the homes that many BIPOC, low-income people, affordable housing renters are that have or are staying in to potentially do a lot of this work and make some changes there on the energy efficiency and the healthy side of these homes as well.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. So then tell us about the work of Earth Advantage.
So Earth Advantage is a nonprofit, and their whole mission is to create the adoption of sustainable buildings across the industry. So, you know, no matter whether that is working with multifamily new buildings, or whether that is working with single family residential existing homes, whether that is working with a single family new construction. And so Earth Advantage kind of goes about through that through three ways: education. And so that's going to be education across to people across the industry, whether that's you're a builder, you are a realtor, you're an appraiser, you're a home energy score assessor. There's all different aspects of teaching people ins and outs of the energy efficiency green building industry. So education, they also help with research. So working with different organizations to potentially help do some research on ventilation strategies that might be cost-effective or cost-effective strategies for building, or let me rephrase that, or cost-effective strategies for creating more thermal-bridged walls to help keep the inside of these buildings a lot longer. And then the last but not least is going to be through the certification aspect. And so Earth Advantage has their own certification program for green homes. And they're predominantly here specifically in the Pacific Northwest, whereas something like a LEED program, that's going to be an international program. But Earth Advantage is very specific to the Pacific Northwest. And that's where they have a lot of their traction.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, that's some amazing work. Did you have something, Ken? I thought you were... Okay.
Nah, I was just still tripping off of that.
So let me kind of delve in a little bit. So you had asked the question about how I got into this industry. So, you know, I went on a tangent to talk about my father and, you know, have that HVAC experience of working with him and going to people's homes and just seeing, you know, how elated people were when, you know, it's 100 degrees outside and you just fix their air conditioning. They're like, oh, yes, like it's not going to be, you know, sweltering tonight. I'll be able to get some sleep, right? So this was always one of those things that always hit me, you know, of helping people in their homes, right? So way I really started learning about this industry, there was a program here in Portland called the Clean Energy Works Oregon. This is where I cut my teeth. At that point in time, I had just graduated from PCC in the Building Construction Technology Program. As soon as I graduated from there, like I said, there was a program, Clean Energy Works Oregon, and they said, hey, you want to start your career in energy efficiency, green building. Well, guess what? We're going to give you some, we're going to pay for your certifications to get BPI, Building Performance Institute certified. I'm like, sign me up. This is like, at that point in time, I think it was like $4,000 or $5,000, right? And this is also one of the things I tell my students, like, get somebody else to pay for them certifications as you get into the industry, right? Definitely, there's always, an employer or somebody to help pay for that and get a scholarship for as you go through and move up in the industry. But I got those certifications and immediately got a job with a company, minority-owned company, doing energy efficiency work in the Clean Energy Works Oregon program. And the interesting thing about that is they said, hey, you're the student from PCC, and so you got the scholarship to get the BPI certifications. You know what? We're going to talk to this minority contractor. We're going to tell them, hey, this guy has the book smarts. He's got the certifications. He's got all that knowledge that he's gone to school for, but he has no experience. So you know what? We're going to pay half his wages for you for a year, right? So they paid half of my wages for this contractor to kind of like get me up to speed, let me learn the ropes, yeah, and you know, really build up my chops in this industry. So I did that for a year. And I, at that time, I wore so many hats. You know, I was doing energy auditing. I was doing my quality assurance. I was doing, you know, the sales. I was working with homeowners. And that's what I really liked about part of this was really helping homeowners understand, you know, their options when it came to doing this work and like why they needed to do certain things first versus doing something else. For instance, you know, you need to be air sealing your home before you're insulating your home. You know, just these things that come to mind that you really need to kind of be able to understand the building science and help people understand that. But I was also doing the work. So I was up in the attics, down in the crawl spaces, you know, doing air sealing, you know, installing insulation, getting dust in my face, you know, it's hard work, but it's rewarding work. And so from there, I learned the existing home side of it. And I did that for about 4 years. And then from there, that's when I kind of pivoted and I wanted to see what the new construction side of things was about. And that's where I kind of got connected with Earth Advantage. And I did an internship with them. And then 2 years later, they ended up hiring me. And then I started working with them and started doing a lot of this diagnostic testing on new homes. But the thing is that diagnostic testing of doing blower doors and duct blasters testing, it relates whether you're doing existing or new construction.
Right. Right. I've got a question. You talked about like having the minority owned companies reach out, like how me thinking Oregon, that's not a thought that pops in my head. Like there's a ton to choose from. When you jumped into it, were the options abound or was it just a few?
So when I first got into this, it was a few, but I was still very green and wasn't quite sure or didn't quite know where I was going to end up in this industry. I just knew that I wanted to get in on this green energy, clean energy wave, if you will, start the work, because as you get in and you start to learn more, you can go down a plethora of rabbit holes of just getting into information and how it relates to, you know, you as a person, you as an industry, but also the community and, you know, what that means potentially for, you know, just like people living in healthy homes. Like that's one of the passions of where I'm at. And I really kind of see things going forward for me as I kind of stay tapped into what's happening in the energy efficiency realm, you know, because I'm looking to see that merger between healthy homes or the medical industry, if you will, and then energy efficient construction.
I can imagine that with some of the newer homes and the research going into, you know, construction, that there's always going to be some level of interest in how can we make this better? How can we make this entire process more efficient economically and from an energy standpoint? Can you talk about some of the conversations or some of the challenges that you may have faced speaking to people with older homes or even getting members of our community interested in having those conversations?
So older homes present their own special challenges. In essence, you know, one of the things is in older homes, they didn't know what they know now today. And so there's like hazardous materials in older homes. One of them is going to be potentially asbestos. So, you know, if you're looking at your ducting and you see about like a 2-inch piece of like white tape and it, you know, it's an older home, more than likely that very well could contain asbestos. There's an old type of insulation called vermiculite. And if you look up in your attic, it's going to look like big pieces of sand that are kind of shiny. They have like a little shiny sheen to them. That's potentially going to, once again, now you don't know if it has asbestos, but it potentially does, right? Another one is your shingles on some siding of the home can potentially contain asbestos. So if you're trying to insulate your walls, you know, that's going to be an issue and potentially prohibit you from doing that. Or it's going to cost a lot to re-side the house and go through that process. Another thing with older homes is you could have really old electrical wiring called knob tube wiring. And this is going to be something that you don't want to insulate over or install insulation in a wall cavity because it could potentially become a fire hazard. And so you don't want to insulate over that. In essence, you want to deactivate those electrical wires before you go in and potentially insulate the home. So that was one of the things I really liked about it, because it's like you get into these older homes and it's almost like each home is a little bit different. So you got to figure out the puzzle and how to come up with the most cost-effective solution to really understand what that homeowner has asked you out there to do, right? So there's two things when you go out there as an energy auditor. You always want to make recommendations to do no harm to the building itself, but you don't want to do any harm to the occupants of that building, right? So when you're working with them and you're going out on site, you know, whatever that person or the issue they may have, you know, our house is cold. Well, you listen to them and understand what they're telling you, because they're going to have insights. They live in that home. That's their place. That's their dwelling. But you also have to have that building science kind of hat on to understand what is the home telling you as well. And you kind of combine those to come up with a set or a list of recommendations for that homeowner to do. And so once again, from that building science perspective, anything that's a health and safety concern, boom, right up to the top, right? Okay. You know, like, so for instance, you know, I'm walking up to the home and like the stairs are wobbly. That's a health and safety issue. Somebody could fall and hurt themselves, you know? So something like that's gonna go to the top of the list. And then from there, it's going to be making recommendations where they're going to get like the most, that are going to be most cost effective or the most bang for their buck, or it's really going to help the health of that home. So like one of the things we consider like in the industry, low hanging fruit. So if you're thinking about air sealing the home, just think about, you know, you got an old home, very drafty, a lot of holes, right? Well, you can't keep that heat inside that home if you got a lot of holes in it, right? So you got to come in and then air seal those holes and those gaps and those voids in the home. And then you need to insulate. You got to think of the home as a six-sided box, four walls, a top and a bottom. So you need to air seal and insulate on all six sides of the box. But now that being said, no, so you do this, but you also got to keep in mind. So we're humans, right? We need to breathe fresh air. We spend 90% of our time indoors. So how are we making sure we're getting fresh air ventilation into that building? These are all things that you've got to consider when you're making these recommendations to people and not causing, once again, the two tenets, do no harm to the building, do no harm to the occupant. So you've got to have somebody that knows, you know, making those recommendations and actually doing that work as well.
Blowing my mind right now.
but even listening in, it's like, you know, there's got to be, it's like that element of people who are problem solvers who see, and it's like breaking that thing down into systems of like, okay, this is the problem presented. Okay, these are the tweaks that need to be made. And in my experience, that's a type of mind, right? It's like the puzzles and wanting to get that figured out. So it's just interesting hearing you speak to this, and kind of you can hear it in your voice that it really is your bag.
Now, can you nail it? It's the difference between solving the Rubik's Cube and taking the stickers off.
Right.
And moving them jaws around. As I'm hearing you talk about air sealing the home. Mm-hmm. So my parents' house is a three-story house we all grew up in. I remember my bedroom's on the third floor, and we used to get leaks. After a certain amount of years, it was just leaks. The seal, it was an A-frame. It was just, you know, it was terrible. And then after I moved out, I remember my mother telling me, we could hear squirrels up in the roof. And I was like, what? And she said, yeah, it's that one tree off the house, the squirrels coming in. So, like, it's a thing where they've gone to the point of, you know, having exterminators come out and do some rough sealing here and there and, you know, get them out there and put whatever baits they need to put in the house. And I'm thinking about how big this house is and for how many years it never seemed like we could quite get it warm. There's a fireplace, which is inoperable, and you get cold, my mom and pop put a sweater on. Put on a hoodie. What I'm not going to do is turn this heat up any higher. And we're not burning kerosene heaters in the house like we used to. So just put a heat, like, you know. So, but to think about, and I've seen my dad do insulation, but to think about having to seal the house first, like, what's the purpose of putting the insulation up if the house isn't sealed? Like, that's just, wow.
And that's the thing, you know. So if you have somebody out there and they're telling you to do insulation, they hadn't even recommended air sealing, they're not doing you any favors, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so in essence, if you have somebody, and especially if you have no insulation up in your attic and they tell you to do insulation, that is just so wrong, because if there is none, then you see where you need to seal at, right?
Yeah.
You have access to be able to do that first, but once that insulation is in there, it just makes it 10 times harder, right? And so once again, that's where, you know, from, I guess, from like the new construction, new building kind of side of things, it's, you know, that really interested me, because it's like, you have this chance for doing it right the first time, but figuring out how to do that, you know, efficiently and correctly in existing homes, it's a little bit of a puzzle sometimes to try and figure that out. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In a previous interview, you described an oncoming silver tsunami. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so silver tsunami is in essence referencing the fact that there's a lot of baby boomers who are about to retire from the construction industry. And I'm trying to pull up one of these stats here, but in essence, what they're looking at, the National Center for Construction Education and Research estimates that 29% of skilled construction workers will retire by 2026 and 41% will have retired by 2031. So let me say that a different way. That's close to a third of skilled construction workers retiring in just over 5 years from now.
Yikes.
So this is where it is very important to understand, okay, if we have, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars coming in through PSEF, I've heard that there's another program coming in through the DEQ. There's another program coming in with Oregon Department of Energy. You know, once again, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. We haven't even begun to talk about infrastructure. Who is going to do this work with those numbers of people retiring? That's why when I'm out there, so part of one of the other jobs I do at Earth Advantage is I do a lot of the pre-apprenticeship training teaching for groups like Constructing Hope, Oregon Tradeswomen, Portland Youth Builders, Portland Opportunities Industrialization Center, Blueprint Foundation, working with these groups to teach these students, like, this is an avenue for you. You know, if you can, you know, start working, getting, building up your skill set, like, there's an easy way for you to move up and move up quickly, especially when you see that the older generation is going to be retiring. What I would like to see there is, instead of just the older generation retiring and not passing that information on, take one of these young people under your wing for a year, impart the knowledge, that way it's just not lost, right? So that is one of the things where I would like to see more programs and even more minority contractors. Like, instead of letting that person retire, just give them more of a mentor teacher kind of responsibility. Obviously, they might still do a little bit of work, you know, but have them teach and guide some of the young people in the industry. That way they can navigate their way and be successful in the industry.
Let me ask you something. Without that changing of the guard, what are we looking at? Like, what are we looking at with that gap? What inevitably is going to happen?
Well, you're going to be looking at, you know, with all of these programs and trying to do work, you're not going to have enough people to do the work. And especially with programs like the Portland Clean Energy Fund that is really geared toward helping the BIPOC community, it's just like, well, let's get people from the community to then start doing this work in the community. And so, you know, obviously the Portland Clean Energy Fund, like, you know, Sam has said that the 8.6 million was kind of like the beta version, right? Mm-hmm. Just mm-hmm. got through with the grant proposal this last Thanksgiving break, you know, that was for 60 million. So I'm really excited to see kind of like where this next step comes into play. And then that's another thing too. They've got another round of money coming in the spring. So there's a lot of different programs and a lot of workforce development training, because we heard them when PSEF said there's not enough grants and proposals to really be helping the minority contractors to help them develop that workforce. Okay, how can we help with this? And so working, like I said, with the pre-apprenticeship training consortium, working with you know, some of the different contractor groups that we're working with, we're helping to hopefully come up with a program that is going to deliver high standards and skilled students coming out of these programs to do this work for PSEP. Or, and that's the other part too, it doesn't just have to be PSEP. Like, it can be outside of that realm too.
So you touched on like workforce training and development. Is it like, can you talk to us about what like the day-to-day of that is? Like, yeah, what's the day-to-day of workforce training and development? What does that entail?
So right now it's working with the Pre-Apprenticeship Training Consortium, working with them. And so right now I deliver an introduction to green building training, right? Okay. And so I come in and it's just kind of like an introduction to green building, because these students are coming into the trades, if you will, not really knowing if they want to go electrical, plumbing, carpentry, but I come in and I'm just like, hey, there's this whole energy efficiency, green building aspect, because that's one of the difference about the industry is that, you know, you can go for this journeyman apprenticeship, if you will, to be an electrician. That doesn't exist if you want to get into the energy efficiency realm. And so what students don't know, it's like, of kind of like how I've done it and other people and professionals in the industry, you have to get certified. You have to get certifications. And what I say is you have to kind of like get that alphabet soup behind your name, right? You know, I'm like SHP, BPI, EA HERS, you know, just like all of these different things. You've got to get these certifications because it shows you've taken the time, you studied, you passed, but now you passed your test, but now you're also working in the field and, you know, honing your chops, honing your skills on doing diagnostic testing and everything that comes with that. So, you know, getting students to understand that there is a whole lane in the construction industry that is really relegated to energy efficiency. And I think that's one of the things that's a little bit of an issue, because there's a lack of diversity when it comes to the industry, because they'll identify, oh, I'm a carpenter, or, you know, I'm an insulator. They're not necessarily an energy efficiency green jobs person. But like, I think that's part of where the industry is going to come back to and really start getting more traction, if you will.
So you mentioned the need to be able to make sure these students find someone that can help pay for the certifications. Outside of that, or maybe that may be the answer to this question, where is funding most needed in workforce training and development? Is that it?
Yes, we need people that we, so there's a couple of different things. We definitely need students that have work ethic, don't mind getting in crawl spaces, attics, learning. Now I'll say this, I'm not telling anybody because it's hard work, right? But it's rewarding. But at the same time, if you're doing crawling in attics and crawl spaces for 30 years, that's going to wear on you. But the thing is, once you get that, you learn how to do the work and you get those certifications, it opens up so many other doors to what you want to do. But you put in that time, you put in that effort, and what you learn, you can apply the building science to the biggest of buildings, to the smallest of buildings. It's still the same. It's building science. It's not rocket science. And so once you kind of understand that, you can apply it to, you know, whatever building you're working on. But we need students, we need people that can do the work, that can do the assessments, right? You know, depending on what those skill sets might be, you might have people who, you know, aren't necessarily salespeople, or they don't have the gift of gab, but they're very technically minded, you know? So maybe their lane is doing energy modeling. They're working on doing the diagnostic testing, right? But you might have somebody who's a lot more dealing with the sales, helping homeowners and talking them through, once again, like why they should do air sealing before they insulate their attic, why they might want to choose a heat pump over just another gas furnace, right? Helping them understand these choices and why they need to do these certain things. So people in the trades is definitely one thing that we need, but we also need, you know, with these jobs and with Portland Clean Energy Fund and other programs coming down the pipeline, there's got a lot of administrative tasks. So people being able to do reporting, doing payroll, helping out with HR, all of the media communications, you know, all of these different things are going to be other jobs needed in this industry. So just thinking about that as well, because, and that's the thing, you're working for a company that has this mission to help, you know, people gain access to healthier, more energy efficient, durable homes. Well, you're a part of that, right? Even though you might not be swinging the hammer or installing the insulation, you're still a part of that movement.
I like that. A couple of parts in there, kind of touching on the different avenues you can go, because there is like this blanket idea of just insulator, electrician. Right. And it's this idea that you're always going to be doing the physical part. And a lot of times we don't understand how many layers there are, you know, even if it's being an estimator, project manager, where you're not necessarily in the field in the same type of way. So I think that's dope that you pointed out a couple of ways that that can be, you know, or avenues that people have once they hop into it.
I will add, so like one of the certifications that I got that really helped open that door for me was my Building Performance Institute, Building Analyst, and Envelope Professional. That those two really helped you understand how to do an energy audit. And when you're doing an energy audit, like I said, if you keep those two tenets, do no harm to the home, do no harm to the occupants, but go in, we're about to do an assessment and, you know, come up with this list and find out this list of things and recommendations that need to be done on the home. Then you take that information in that list. Okay, we're going to sit down with the homeowner and, you know, we're going to talk about this, right? And once again, like I said, that was one of my favorite parts of this, because it's helping people understand what they need to do. And then once they decide on what aspects of the upgrades, energy efficiency measures that they want to do, that's when you're talking with them, and then you're scheduling the work. And now you really get into some people say, the real work of actually scheduling, doing the work, buying your materials, lining out your employees, you know, confirming with the homeowner that, hey, you know, you're not going to be there or you're going to be there, and everything that comes with doing an actual construction project.
I'm going to hit you up for some cliff notes real quick, because I feel like I'm going to need a study guide to have this conversation with my parents. So can you like tap into some of maybe the most challenging or unsuccessful situations perceived that you may have turned around with having some of these conversations with the homeowners? Because I mean, I can imagine, again, you know, going into your first home and being like, oh yeah, I got this, no problem, I'm gonna be able to nail it. And like, what was that like?
You will be humbled real quick. Because you also have to keep in mind, like, you know, you got to be cognizant you are in somebody else's space.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're in their home, you know, and you got to keep, you know, that lens that you're in their space. You got to treat it with respect, and, you know, and then you got to also learn, you know, what your recommendations can be, what they may not be, and making sure you're making the right ones.
Okay. Because that was very useful. I could easily see my mom being like, well, this is my house. You can go back to your house. Do what you want over there. Don't nobody got money for what you're talking about. But, you know.
So one of the other things I think here's where I like to really dig in. So, okay. You know, when you're talking about doing this work, forget the energy efficiency piece, right? Forget that. I don't even, you know, when it comes around full circle at the end, oh, by the way, we're making the home more energy efficient. What I like to put first and foremost, it's going to be a healthier home, right? It's a healthier home for you. It's a healthier home for your children, grandchildren, whatever that might be, right? Also, another aspect of this work is you're helping to keep it maintained, right? And so now you're creating also generational wealth. That way it's not getting deteriorated because, you know, somebody's older. They can't necessarily keep up with the daily maintenance or the annual maintenance of the home, right? These are some of those things that need to get done and get, you know, wrapped up in maybe some of that energy efficiency work and that health and life safety work done on these homes. So I really like to put forth that health conversation first. And oh, by the way, by doing what's going to make the home healthier, it's going to make it a more energy efficient home. It's going to make it more comfortable. By insulating, air sealing your home, guess what? By default, you're going to make it a lot quieter. So you don't hear your neighbor cranking up the lawnmower at, you know, 9 in the morning on a Saturday. You don't hear them cranking up the motorcycle, right? So these are those, what I like to call those non-energy benefits, right? You get non-energy benefits from doing energy efficiency work. And that's where I really like to engage people, because then it's just like, oh, yeah, I get it. Because another example that I use with my students, you can have somebody who has all the money in the world, 6,000 square foot home over in Southwest Hills, right? You know, whatever. I don't care about the energy usage in that home. Same person, same building. You tell them that there's mold growing in it and it's making their daughter sick, you best believe they're going to make a decision to make that home healthier. And so these are those things that I think really get, you know, people engaged and want to do the work when you start talking about the non-energy benefits of the work.
So I feel like you kind of got a little bit into this, but thinking about, you know, the conversations that members of the community can have to help bring awareness to the clean energy, to bring awareness to clean energy initiatives. What are some of those type of conversations that people can start having to get people on board?
Well, I think working with community-based organizations and nonprofits that are, you know, helping the community, in North, Northeast Portland, or whatever community you're in, East Portland, there's different organizations that are really starting that conversation of what does this look like specifically for their neighborhood? Like one of the things I'm working on right now with a group, East Portland Resilience Coalition, and working with some of the team members over there. Okay, so this is a coalition, if you will, of East Portland neighborhoods, right? So how about we get people that from are the that are from the Korean community, that are from the Hungarian community, that are from the Ethiopian community, and train them up on how to do home energy score assessments. That way now you can then reach a lot further into the communities to start that conversation. Because here's the other part. None of this works gets done until you've made an assessment of the state that home is before any work is done, right? Because that's part of the requirements of the Portland Clean Energy Fund or even other programs. You know, how much energy is it you reducing? How much greenhouse gas emissions are you reducing from the energy consumption on this home? So what state is it in at the time before you do work? Then you do the work, then you come back and you get that other assessment to say, hey, this is what we've done. We've added insulation, we air sealed, we put in furnaces. So I think that's one of the things that I think is, you know, really key, is that there's jobs to do this assessment work because it needs to be done. And you can't go any further until you have that piece. And so I think community-based organizations that have access to the homeowners, right, and that need to get this work done, and then starting those conversations and being part of how do they get engaged with, you know, professionals, home performance professionals, minority contractors, because trust me, a lot of community-based organizations and nonprofits are working in this space right now. And that's another caveat to the whole Portland Clean Energy Fund. The nonprofits and the community-based organizations get the money. The minority contractor that's for profit has to partner with the community-based organization or the nonprofit. So, or the student that wants to tap into that needs to work with a minority contractor who is working with the community-based organization or nonprofit. So that's how this is kind of really coming together, at least how I see it in my mind, with, you know, bringing everyone together and at that table.
That's major, because you definitely stand to have a much better result when you have trusted members of the community having conversations with each other.
Yeah.
It's one thing to be like, all right, I'm going to take it back to my parents again. I'm going to send someone over to do an assessment. I don't know who this person is. I don't know why you have them walking over my house, da, 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 da. But if we can arm ourselves to have these conversations, you know, informed conversations with members of our family and members in our community, whether it's, you know, someone from the church, someone from the community center, just another trusted member, it brings us that much closer to getting these assessments done and moving forward. I know money is always an issue. It's always something that pops in people's mind first and foremost. I can't afford to do anything you're talking about, so let's just cut the conversation there. But quite often, we're just unaware of the resources that are actually available, the federal dollars that are coming down to get this work done. and we just, you know, we got to make each other aware of it. You mentioned a couple different jobs within this sector, different ways that we can get involved and actually benefit within the industry. On a national level, when they talk about energy in the energy sector, it's looked at as a job killer because we're moving from the traditional ways of using energy and our energy relationship with maybe like fossil fuels and things of that nature. They don't want to talk. They don't want to invest in electric. They don't want to invest in solar. It's kind of like a huge like negative umbrella when you start talking green anything. Can you push back against that a little bit?
Well, I think, you know, that perception and that concept needs to be adjusted because, you know, the utilities did a study a while back, and what they learned was that here in the Pacific Northwest, we have a lot of people moving out here to the Portland area, right? And so to accommodate all those people, what are they going to do? They would have to either build a brand new power plant, like do nothing for anyone, right? And build a new power plant, or B, we can say, hey, it's going to cost us a lot less to let you, or for us to give you an incentive to insulate your home, for you to install a newer furnace, for you to install a more efficient hot water heater. So guess what? Now your home is not using as much energy. That energy can now go somewhere else, right? It can go to pay and heat someone else's home. And at the same time, what do you get? You get a more energy efficient, healthier, safer home. And so I think it's about, once again, instead of it just being all energy related, what are these non-energy benefits that come out of doing this work? And I think that's how a lot of the conversation needs to be kind of like changed and guided, if you will, a little bit.
Solid. I like it. I like it. There's a theme we keep hitting back to. Don't make it about.
One of the things I'm curious about, because, you know, and even Ambush given the examples, you know, of his parents, but like the obstacles from like getting buy-in from various stakeholders, like how does that, what are the obstacles that you run into?
Well, I would say, so right now it's a good time to be in this industry because, like I said, there's a lot of money heading down to this industry, and it's just a matter of, you know, being in kind of like the group of people that are talking about making these changes and doing the work. As far as obstacles, I think that, so one of the things that we're hearing from a lot of the contractors is that they just don't have enough, like there's a labor shortage, right? Like right now, there is a labor shortage. So once again, like if we have all of this money to do the work, who are these people that are going to do the work? And so it's about, once again, trying to make that connection and bridge that gap from students graduating from these pre-apprenticeship training programs that are graduating from two-year associate degree programs to get them jobs with these contractors that are going to do this work. But at the same time, like these contractors, they need to understand, like a lot of the younger generation, like they want to have some type of mission or be purpose-driven with the work that they're doing. And so once again, that's why I one of the reasons I really like doing this work, because I kind of tell people, like, poke a hole in it. Like, I'm helping people, you know, make their homes more energy efficient. I'm helping them make their homes healthier, more sustainable. We're helping decrease our nation's dependence on foreign oil. Like, these jobs are local. You can't, you know, subcontract these jobs to somebody in Montana or Idaho or whatever that is. Like, these are local jobs. And so, like I said, I think when you add all of that in, it's really a powerful way to say, like, you know, this is the work I'm doing and this is what I'm proud of.
That's a really good example. Yeah, making it hyper-local with the conversation. Like, you, this is a way you can directly affect your community, your family, you know, members in your immediate circle. Like, you can turn things around. One thing I haven't heard you mention as an incentive, and I'm curious about this, is the relationship between making your home more energy efficient and just saving money. Is that not a good pivot to use in having these conversations?
No, because I mean, you know, everybody needs to save money. You know, I'm not trying to do that right now. So, you know, it's always about trying to save money. And I think, okay, you know, saving that money to, you know, do whatever it is that you want. But You know, if the thing is if there's incentives there, being able to tap into them, being able to use them, you know, like, so like one of the, so for example, there's a, I think through Energy Trust of Oregon, there's a community-based partner program where clients from these community-based partners, I think like Community Energy Project is one, African American Alliance of Home Ownership, PCRI, Portland Community Reinvestment Initiatives, you can go through these programs, the incentives are actually higher when you are working with these community-based programs, because there's a, they just, they offer a little bit more of an incentive to install insulation in your attic or install a new furnace or whatever that might be. So incentives is just, you know, extra money to help offset you paying it. So I'm all about the incentives. It's just a matter of people knowing about them, tapping into them, and them, you know, being widely available.
In there, what are like some of the awareness campaigns? Because that's what it sounds like, is people needing to become aware of what's out there. What are some of the efforts that have been done to get this in front of people? Or is this, you know, more in the word of mouth? How are people getting the information?
So I think some of this is, once again, working with those community-based organizations. Like I know, for example, like I'm working on right now a set of webinars with the African American Alliance of Homeownership to come out, you know, beginning of next year, to really talk about some of these different aspects when we're talking about incentives and healthy homes, climate resiliency, and whatnot. So just really tapping into those community-based and nonprofit organizations, and seeing what they have going on their events list. Yeah, that's definitely going to be a good place to tap in to understand what's happening in that landscape, if you will. Okay.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. So I got one more question before we wrap. What are some final words that you would impart on our listeners? Like, you know, I don't want to. I know you don't have a speech prepared, but what are some final thoughts, some final words you'd have for our listeners?
So I think we're at a pivotal point where, you know, people have, or people will have access to funds to help offset climate change. And in that process, whether you believe it or not, the thing is, guess what? This is going to help you make your home more energy efficient, help you make your home healthier. But by doing that, we're actually going to help with climate change goals and initiatives set out by the governor of the state. So I think, you know, being able to tap into this is going to be one way where people can help make that change, not only on a bigger social scale, but also very local and also very personal to them with inside their home and their space.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much, James. This was very informative. I'm going to try to like slip this episode to my parents first in bits and pieces. Then I'm gonna try to sit them down for it. But this is amazing. I think this is going to go a long way with people just having conversations with other members of the community and just bringing them to the understanding that some of the challenges we face in the past, there are some federal dollars now. There are people that have been doing the work on a local level to secure funds and secure resources to bring us to a place where, you know, we don't have to live in the conditions that we were used to. When you started talking about asbestos, like so just some of the older homes, the first thing that came to my mind was lead and how that's still a pretty big problem. Like, we don't hear about it anymore, but it's not like a whole bunch of houses got retrofitted these old homes still exist. When you talked about that insulation tape with the white, I said, I know that tape. Like, I remember that tape being around the air conditioner. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for tonight. This was amazing.
Yeah, I just maybe one other thing I will just say. So with the Portland Clean Energy Fund, I did like a 2-hour webinar to really kind of expound on some of these aspects and ideas. It's the Home Energy Efficiency webinar, but you can find that on the Portland Clean Energy Fund site. It's about 2 hours long, and it really kind of delves into some of these aspects. And so highly recommend going to the website and checking it out.
Excellent, excellent. Y'all heard it here. Please share this with as many people as possible. James, thank you so much. We will catch you on the next episode.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Peace.